Welcome to Clinical Conversations 108th podcast. It comes to you from Journal Watch. Go to the website at jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. It's November 10th, 2010. And this is a midweek edition with, unusually, no news summary. The reason for the special edition is a special interview with a principal investigator from the study that the National Cancer Institute stopped last week on CT scanning for lung cancer screening. Let's go right to the interview. If you have thoughts, please share them on the podcast website. That's podcasts.jwatch.org. The National Cancer Institute last week stopped the National Lung Screening Trial, which was comparing low-dose annual CT scans versus chest x-rays to screen for lung cancer. The subjects were some 50,000 people at high risk, that is, older people with an at least 30-pack-year smoking history. According to the Cancer Institute's announcement, lung cancer mortality was decreased by about 20% and all-cause mortality by about 7% in the CT-screened group. That was enough of an improvement to prompt the stoppage, which was reported widely. Not much additional data have been released, and only a description of the trial was made available in the journal Radiology. We are fortunate to have the principal investigator of the trial, Dr. Denise Aberle, as our guest this time. Dr. Aberle is principal investigator of the National Lung Screening Trial, American College of Radiology Imaging Network. She is professor of radiology at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, and she's also professor of bioengineering at UCLA's Henry Samueli School of Engineering. Welcome, Dr. Aberle.
Thank you.
Well, were you surprised by the committee's decision to stop the trial?
Well, I was, in a word, flabbergasted. The Data and Safety Monitoring Board that independently reviews this data has been reviewing interim analyses of the trial since 2006 and has been reviewing twice annually all of the data accumulated on the trial since the trial's inception in 2003. Mm-hmm. So this was the first ever indication to me as the principal investigator of the outcome of the data. The principal investigators who operate and who are responsible for, you know, the collection and oversight of the data are you know, kept away from the data so that we can't influence how the data is actually or how the trial is operationalized. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time that I'd ever heard anything, and it was phenomenal.
So it makes your life interesting, or more interesting then, because you had no indication that this was happening, and now you've got a lot of data that you've got to get together. And I was going to ask you whether those data are under peer review at a journal, but I'm going to guess, and tell me if I'm wrong, that paper is yet to be written, and the analyses are probably furiously underway now.
That's exactly right. There are a couple of hurdles that we have yet to go through. The first is that the vast majority of the data is in. There are some remaining outstanding data elements that will make the data more comprehensive and valid. However, those data will not change the primary endpoint that was reported to the press last week. But we still want to get all of the data that we can in preparation for a final analysis. The second thing is that we have to ensure rigorous data quality assurance. So we verify data. We make sure that any data that is outside of what our expected ranges would be for a particular data element are correct by querying the sites and requiring that they go back and review certain data elements. So that's been done all along throughout the trial. It will continue with this most recent data that is coming in. And then finally, we have the analyses. And the analyses to address the primary endpoint, you know, have been done in preparation for interim analyses. So what will change primarily are small, you know, percentages or numbers of the data in those analyses, but the final paper will state what was released in the press on Thursday.
Older studies have looked at this question and have said that yes, indeed, CT scanning is more efficient than chest x-rays for finding lung cancers. But then you have this problem of overdiagnosis. And I know that you have not studied those data yet. So let's just talk about the downside of this. How is this study in its approach different from the studies that found that, oh yeah, CT scanning does find a lot more, but then you're expected to investigate?
Number one, this trial is unique in that it is the largest trial of lung cancer screening, and it is also the largest randomized trial of screening that's been conducted. So when the participants were enrolled, and there were a little over 53,000 of those individuals, they were equally randomized to one or the other arm. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, we're able to equally distribute into these, you know, two different arms any confounders, any variables that could explain lung cancer other than the ones of which we are aware. Okay. So having done that allows us to look at these two arms to look for significant, statistically significant differences in their death rates. And we were able to show that. There is no trial that has done that to date. There have been a number of observational trials, or what we call uncontrolled trials, in which all subjects receive CT screening, or in some instances receive both CT and chest x-ray. And those trials have established that, indeed, CT is much more precise or accurate or sensitive in detecting lung nodules and, in fact, even in detecting lung cancers. But never have we shown that there is actually a mortality benefit.
Meanwhile, between now and the time that your results finally appear, what has your feeling been about CT screening, and what would you suggest that clinicians do in the interim?
Okay, so the way I'm going to answer that is twofold. Number one, I'm going to tell you that people, certainly prior to this time, have called me. Patients, participants from the NLST, colleagues, people I've never heard of, have called me and said, what should I do? And historically, I have told them what we do and don't know about CT screening, what the potential risks of screening are, and have let them make their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know more than I did 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And the information that I now have tells me that in this randomized trial with a select group of individuals, and they were selected based on their age and a significant current or former smoking history, there is at least a 20% mortality reduction in individuals who undergo CT screening. So I know there's now benefit. The challenge that we have, and that we will have for, I think, you know, the near future, is generalizing from a carefully controlled trial of participants who were, you know, carefully chosen, and applying those to a general population. Moreover, this study was performed at many of the top institutions in the country, and used a dedicated protocol for acquisition, a specific mechanism for rendering an interpretation, and also had guidelines that they could use to recommend additional evaluation for patients with positive screens. So how we translate that across the United States to anyone who has a multi-detector CT scanner will take a little bit of time and effort.
That's fair enough, and I should say it's a fair assessment of what you know and what you can reveal, not having done the analysis.
You know, there are a couple things that have occurred that give me pause.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that, in my professional opinion, science, medical science, is data-driven, mm-hmm. and that data needs to undergo rigorous peer review before it is considered legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself in a situation in which we have gone to the public with an announcement and have not provided them the underlying background scientific data. And I think that deserves some comments. The National Cancer Institute, you know, has put up a website that provides a variety of question answers that address this. But I think many of my colleagues in the scientific community are not just uncomfortable with how they should manage their patients, but they're uncomfortable with the fact that they're reading about it in the New York Times or the LA Times and not in a major medical journal. Mm-hmm. And I empathize with that. And I think the only thing that I would say with respect to that, and that was that the NLST trial leadership and the Data and Safety Monitoring Board and the National Cancer Institute that funded this, along with the American public, talked about this a lot. And there was heated debate over the best course of action. But the one thing that the first and primary obligation that we had was to the participants. And everyone agreed that the participants needed to be notified immediately in both the CT arm and the chest X-ray arm of what the results were. If we had done that without putting out also a public announcement, then the news of the trial would have gone out through word of mouth, and mm-hmm. there would have been no control over what that message said. So we opted for this, understanding that we're going to have to work very diligently and very aggressively to get the data in a form that's publishable in the immediate future. But I think people need to understand that the obligation, to our mind, was an ethical obligation, and that trumped getting the paper out first. That's one comment. The other comment and the other message that I think is really important from this trial and is not actually an endpoint of the trial, and that is the message that CT screening is not a panacea. If you want to get rid of lung cancer, then you need to put the cigarettes away. We need to reach current smokers and encourage them to stop permanently, and we need to reach young future smokers and advise them never to start. And that will be the single most effective way to reduce lung cancer mortality in the United States. It does not address that proportion, and it's not a small proportion, of individuals who get lung cancer who were never smokers. And we're going to have to figure out ways to address that very special but different group. But right now, people need not to be lulled into some sense of security that they can smoke and get screened and save themselves, because we have not shown that.
Okay.
I think your listeners have a right to know why we went to press before we published. And I think it's a great question, and it was a hard one.
And thank you so much, Dr. Aberle.
Sure.
That was Conversation 108. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thank you for listening.